From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. This past week saw the 16th summit of the Bolivarian Alliance for Peoples of Our America, or ALBA, which was held in Havana, Cuba. ALBA includes 11 full member states in Latin America and the Caribbean, including Venezuela, Cuba, Bolivia, Nicaragua, Dominica, Ecuador, Antigua, and Barbuda, St. Vincent and the Grenadines, St. Lucia, Grenada, and the Federation of St. Kitts and Nevis. For more on that, we spoke with our reporter from south of the border, Tony Solo, from Managua in Nicaragua, one of the ALBA countries.
The ALBA summit, that's the summit of the Bolivarian Alliance of the Americas. It was quite an important meeting for the organization as an organization. And you're talking about Cuba, Bolivia, Venezuela, Nicaragua,
yep.
St. Vincent and the Grenadines, Dominica, Antigua and Barbuda, and a couple of other Caribbean countries that are members of ALBA. Suriname's an observer.
Right.
Haiti's got permanent observer status. So in terms of the region, it was quite an important meeting. And of course, it was also a meeting of the last four governments in mainland Latin America that are governed by progressive movements, progressive political parties, are more even revolutionary in the case of Cuba especially, but in Venezuela and Nicaragua, and the Sandinista revolution here in Nicaragua, the Bolivarian revolution in Venezuela, and in effect an indigenous people's revolution in Bolivia.
Yeah.
So there are four countries that have managed to resist the recent offensive over the last 2-3 years by the United States and its regional allies to overthrow governments one way or another, by either locking up politicians that are likely to win elections, as in the case of Lula da Silva in Brazil, or co-opting treacherous individuals, as they have done in Ecuador with Lenin Moreno, and so forth. And in Chile, of course, the big thing, the reason people like Sebastián Piñera can win in Chile is because left and progressive forces are divided. And if you added together the progressive vote in the first round of the elections in Chile, unless I'm misremembering, they had a clear majority over the right-wing vote. So, and the right-wing win because progressive forces are divided, as they did back in 2015 in Argentina.
Right. And some people stayed home, Argentina and Brazil. I mean, look, the strategies that are conducted, it's kind of funny and almost ironic, except it's so disingenuous. They're reporting in the U.S. right now, that's been rolling through the media the last couple of days, the same thing that's been reported, quote-unquote, a number of times since 2016, that here's proof that the Russians were targeting black voters in the United States by peddling fake news that would tend to suppress the vote. In other words, negative stories about Democrats that would discourage black voters from turning out. This is the same canard that was used, as a matter of fact.
Right.
Margaret Kimberly from Black Agenda Report sent that on Facebook before, a headline from the New York Times. I'm guessing it's from like 1918 to 1922 or something, about a party congress, a Communist Party Congress that was held in Riga in the dawning days of the Soviet Union, and talking about organizing Negroes around the world against imperialism, and that this was, you know, proof of the Russian meddling, you know, among the black folks in the United States and elsewhere. It's the same thing going on now, and it's the same story, only when they offer evidence, it's like, and here they spent $4,000 doing it. In fact, exactly that kind of behavior is what we've seen targeting progressive voters in Argentina, Brazil, with a full-court press suppressing Lula's ability to even be on the ballot, for example, constant warfare against the state in Venezuela and other places, all intended to dampen support for progressive politics, because that's the only way they can win, these guys.
Yeah, and so in that context, the ALBA summit over the weekend in Havana was extremely important, and what they talked about was they themselves, the leaders there, Nicolas Maduro, Miguel Díaz-Canel, the Cuban president,
right.
Daniel Ortega and Evo Morales of Bolivia, Ralph Gonsalves of St. Vincent and the Grenadines. I think is it Dominic Skerrit? I've forgotten the name of the prime minister in Dominica, but all the leaders agreed that they needed to focus on unity. They needed to not reinvent, but certainly reactivate in a more dynamic way the various initiatives that have made ALBA so successful over the last 10 years, in particular.
Yeah. Yeah. As a matter of fact, President Miguel Díaz-Canel from Cuba, in advance of the summit, tweeted the words of Hugo Chavez at the founding of ALBA, 2004, I think it was, or 14 years ago or whatever, that ALBA is the necessary union of the countries of Latin America and the Caribbean, a historic project, the formation of a geopolitical space that is just beginning, as the name ALBA means sunrise. And so even though they're 14 years into it, they see this as a long-term project that is just, gathering together.
Yeah, and Miguel Díaz-Canel also wrote in spoke in his speech about the importance of ALBA in terms of changing the nature of international relations in Latin America, and how important that has been. Because ALBA is a solidarity-based body in which everybody has the same weight. An island nation like Dominica, or an island nation like St. Vincent and the Grenadines, or St. Kitts and Nevis is another member of ALBA. And they all have the same weight as much bigger countries like Bolivia or Venezuela. It's an attempt to establish a new vision of international relations based on solidarity and genuine cooperation, rather than the phony development cooperation that is used as a neo-colonial tool by the countries of North America and Europe in particular. But if you look at ALBA, what have been its headline projects over the years? And they've assisted well over 2 million people to recover their sight in different countries. They've eliminated illiteracy in Bolivia, Nicaragua, and Venezuela.
Amazing.
By the UNESCO's benchmarks, and so on. And the role of Cuban and Venezuelan medical schools for the ALBA countries has been tremendous in terms of training up a new generation of medical professionals who are focused on a solidarity-based approach to, and a community-based approach to, medicine. Now, and when people talk about revolution, the visions that people conjure up are barricades and flags waving and stuff like that. But that's the nitty-gritty of revolution is actually that stuff. So, creating a generation of people who think completely differently about, how they do medicine or how they do teaching or, that's what's truly revolutionary. And that has been a tremendous achievement of ALBA within the ALBA framework, within the ALBA countries. So where it's tended to be weak is in stuff like they talk about achieving economic emancipation, but that's extremely difficult in a world that's dominated, or has been dominated up till very recently, almost entirely by the financial system of the United States and Western Europe. And that includes crucial things to do with trade, like insurance. So, you know, when ALBA was set up, I remember back in 2008 doing an interview with the head of Nicaragua's Central Bank back then, a guy called Antonio Rosales, a very smart guy. And he was explaining to me back then that one of the weaknesses of ALBA was that, for example, that it doesn't have its own insurance mechanisms to guarantee oil tankers and the airliners and stuff like that. And Rosales pointed out these various weak points that ALBA really needed to work on. But in that context back then, it was very difficult to do because, you know, how do you kind of suddenly set up a reinsurance company that is able to cope with, you know, large scale disasters, for example.
Right. Where do you get $200 billion? Where do you get $200 billion to underwrite whole block worth of economic activity?
Yeah. Right. So I mean, in all the social stuff, ALBA has been incredibly successful.
Right.
But in the kind of financial and related services area, it hasn't been so successful by any means.
Right.
And so what? But that's changing now. And that one of the reasons that it's changing is because in response to the ALBA initiative, apart from its political offensive, the United States and its European allies have also engaged in an economic offensive that has forced major global players in particular in terms of trade. But that, of course, that's going to spill over into financial services and stuff. So you've got China and Russia talking about setting up their own financial arrangements, their own equivalent to the SWIFT financial transaction service, for example.
Right.
And they have the capacity to do stuff like set up massive underwriting operations for insurance purposes and so on. And we can see the way that over the years, in an incremental way, China in particular has engaged in currency swap arrangements. Argentina is a country in Latin America that has done that with China, for example, and they're engaging in trade in their own country, their country's own currencies, for example, with Iran and other countries. And so, as the United States has intensified its ultimately futile attempt to impose economic sanctions on everybody in the rest of the world. And what the rest of the world has responded by setting up its own, working out ways of doing things that bypass the United States. And so what you've got in Venezuela, one of the suggestions that came up at the ALBA summit was that Venezuela is encouraging its ALBA partners to use the petro as a common currency for various transactions. The petro is that cryptocurrency that Venezuela has introduced as a way to try and escape, to some extent at least, the domination of international financial markets of the dollar. So, who knows how that's going to pan out? It may work, might not work, we don't know. But the point is that you have these four Latin American countries and five or six Caribbean countries all working together to try and work out ways of doing things as a block, as a coherent block, in a way that avoids the domination and the hegemony, if you like, of the United States. And that was one of the fundamental things that came out of this ALBA summit. So, and you know, the other things that they came out with are pretty conventional. You know, they're talking about the need for multilateral trade, the need to recognize fundamental principles of international law, you know, like non-intervention and non-aggression.
Right.
All those you know, all those absolutely fundamental things that the United States completely ignores from one moment to the next. And they expressed solidarity with Nicaragua. They expressed solidarity with Venezuela. And obviously they expressed solidarity with the Cuban Revolution. Right. And they expressed solidarity with Evo Morales, who is the next in line for, in Bolivia, where they're the next in line for the kind of offensive that we've seen in Nicaragua this year, in Venezuela over the last few years, and against Cuba that we've seen over the last few decades. So it was a very important summit in fundamentally in terms of reaffirming the right to sovereign development by the peoples of the member countries of ALBA, and also looking at ways of enhancing their unity and looking at ways of escaping from the financial and economic and trade domination of the United States. And of course, there, if you look at ALBA when it was founded, look at the moment in which it was founded, 2004. Yeah. You know, and Venezuela was under siege from the United States.
Right.
Back then, Haiti had just had its legitimate government overthrown in a coup, and there it was a very bad moment in terms of
that kind
of initiative.
The U.S. had just invaded. The U.S. had just invaded Iraq. There was, you know, every kind of threat was being made against North Korea, against Cuba, you know, against all of the quote-unquote outliers of the empire, basically.
Yeah. So, and ALBA was founded at a very disadvantageous and adverse moment in terms of international relations, precisely as a means to change that.
Right.
Now, here we are, what are we, 14 years later. The situation is very different in the world. The United States is in decline, very, very clearly. And Russia has military superiority over the United States now, if we can believe the claims about their new weapon systems. China is rapidly overtaking the United States, if it hasn't done already, as the leading economic power, although the statistics might not say that in practice.
Right.
In terms of dynamism and initiative, I mean, which is the country in the world that is leading the world in trade initiatives and investment initiatives? It's certainly not the United States.
I would say in terms of, if tomorrow everybody decides we're no longer honoring anyone else's paper documents, where are the factories? When China says turn out 1,000 cars by 3 o'clock this afternoon, those factories will get to work. When they say it in the United States, somebody will call China and they'll get hung up on.
Right.
So, right. You know, in terms of the actual economic power, there's been a real transfer that's not really part of the discussion yet.
Yeah, and so that's the new context in which this latest ALBA summit has been held, ostensibly,
right,
in very adverse circumstances, again, in a Latin American context. But the election of Andrés Manuel López Obrador recently is a very clear sign that, and with other things being equal, and people at grassroots will vote for progressive leaders who offer them real policies, not just neoliberal mumbo jumbo,
right, and, you know,
pie in the sky.
Right.
So there's this kind of mismatch between the economic reality and the apparent political reality.
Yes.
That the United States has been able to manipulate for itself over the last, where would you put the change? 2015 and the vote in Argentina?
I guess, maybe a little earlier, but yeah, I mean, at the coup in Honduras, I don't know where you would...
The soft coup in Paraguay.
Yeah, anyway, right.
And 2012. But over the last few years, the United States has been able to kind of manipulate things in its favor, but it won't be able to do that forever. And that is one of the things that the ALBA countries are insisting on, that, you know, they they insist that Latin America should be allowed to develop on its own terms without constant intervention from the United States. And that what the United States' response to that is to start kind of blaming China and attack China and say, well, you know, we need to stop China getting more influence or Russia getting more influence in Latin America.
Right.
But even right-wing governments like Argentina then turn around and sign a string of very important economic agreements and trade agreements with China.
Right.
So what does that tell you about the development of U.S. influence in the region?
See, because this is an entirely different element of the overall dynamic than existed, say, 30, 40 years ago during the Cold War. You know, if the U.S. and was able to marshal, you know, some measure of unanimity among itself, the Europeans and Japan at that point, say 30, 40 years ago, facing some other countries and saying, look, we're going to cut you out of the world economy, meant you were cut out of the world economy. Now, if the U.S. says we're cutting you out of the world economy, and China says, well, except for us, there's a whole different situation there for the target country. Because, again, you know, the U.S. might take orders for sales of cars from the target country, but they can order direct from China where they're being built.
Right. Yeah, so that's this new context in which the ALBA summit took place, and among the special characteristics of the ALBA group is the special place that the Caribbean has within it. For example, in their final declaration, they reaffirmed their continued support to Caribbean countries in their claim for compensation for the genocide of the native population and the horrors of slavery and trafficking.
Right.
So you won't see that in many international declarations in which, for example, the Organization of American States. Can you imagine that?
No, there's an awful lot of very, very good work on reparations that's taking place in the Caribbean, and it is completely shut out of places like the OAS and other institutions. UN, too, by the way, in practicality.
Right. And similarly on climate change, and countries look at what happened to Dominica and Barbuda in the last serious hurricanes.
That's right.
And their economies were completely wiped out.
Destroyed.
Now, and in terms of Nicaragua's representative in the recent the COP24, the Conference of Parties number 24 in Katowice on climate change, and Nicaragua made a point of mentioning Dominica and Barbuda at that high level conference. And as an example of countries that are being seriously affected by climate change and are getting practically zero support from international countries who are actually principally responsible for climate change. And so that's another area where the ALBA countries like Bolivia, Nicaragua, Cuba and Venezuela are defending the members of the ALBA bloc. You know, and on at things that are absolutely fundamental for the well-being and the future of people in the Caribbean, especially smaller countries like Dominica and Antigua and Barbuda and so on. So, and of course that is why the United States is mounting an increasingly aggressive assault on Cuba, Bolivia, Venezuela, and Nicaragua, because they are the kind of the holdout countries, the redoubts of progressive policies and revolutionary policies in the region. And they are the countries that Colombia or Argentina are not going to speak up on behalf of people in the Caribbean, right?
Right.
And so if people say, well, why is the United States or why do we accuse the United States of targeting Nicaragua and Venezuela? Isn't it just their own internal failures that have led to the different kinds of crises that those countries have suffered? And you hear that argument from liberals and progressives in in the West. Yeah. And then when Nicaragua and Venezuela try to defend themselves against and the sanctions and the measures that the United States applies, and those same people will say, oh, well, they shouldn't be doing that. Those are violations of civil and political rights that shouldn't happen. But it's almost impossible to explain to people that the reason the United States is behind these attacks is because Nicaragua, Venezuela, Cuba, Bolivia are the only countries in the region with governments that defend the basic right to development of people in Latin America and the Caribbean. That's yep. why they're under attack, essentially. And you can say, oh, well, it's because the Cuban Revolution or because the Bolivarian Revolution or because. But the fundamental reason right. is that the United States does not want to see ordinary people, the impoverished majority, realize a decent life and realize their right to development. That's the fundamental reason.
Exactly right. When they talk about it's because of the Cuban Revolution or Bolivarian Revolution or whatever, it isn't because of those things. The objection to the Cuban Revolution was exactly that basically it was producing a Cuba that wanted to chart its own course. It wanted to develop itself. It wanted to uplift its people. It wanted to apply its own wealth to solving its own problems. That is what couldn't be tolerated.
Yeah, and so what you then get are these completely irrational stories about, you know, Nicaragua. Daniel Ortega and the Sandinista government took power in Nicaragua, or took office in Nicaragua, in 2007. Mm. And in the 11 years, it's 11 years now, almost
9
12.
Years. Sorry. 11. Yeah, you're right.
They've completely turned the country around economically. It's been the most economically successful country in Central America,
yep.
and among the most successful in the whole region
yep.
ever since 2010, 2011.
And by every measure.
Yeah. So then, in social measures, not just in economic measures, in social measures, gender representation, all that, all those
quality,
things.
All of it. Yep.
It's been the most successful country in the region. But you then get people saying, well, it's because Daniel Ortega is so repressive that there's been this crisis in the country, that we had earlier between April and July.
Right.
But that's completely irrational, because in just a month before the crisis broke in April, there was I think it was the Mitofsky or Latino Barometer, one of those regional polls, came out with a finding that Daniel Ortega was the most popular president in the region.
Right.
So you get these. Why was he the most popular president in the region? Because of the tremendous social and economic advances that Nicaragua's people have experienced over the last 10, 11 years.
Right.
So then, and that is precisely why there was a crisis, because the United States and its local allies deliberately engineered an attempted coup.
Right.
Because the Sandinista government was so successful, and now they're getting to work on Bolivia, aren't they? Exactly the same mechanisms that they've used in Venezuela and in yep. Nicaragua that are now being put into place in Bolivia, and we'll see more of that in 2019.
The interesting thing is that the long curve of events there, demonstrates that the U.S. is going to lose the attempt to own Latin America, and this development project is going to happen, and that's where the long game goes. But what it seems like they're trying to do is kneecap progress as it develops in the hope that somehow it's going to stop it eventually. But I don't think so, and we got to go because we're out of time. So
right.
we could pick it up there and kick that around next week if you like, Tony. I appreciate your time.
Sweet.
You got it, bro.
Thanks a million,
though. Thank you, too. Take care. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.